This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. I'm your host, Gaylord Rhodes, the Vegas golf coach. And after 30 years as a golf professional, teacher, and coach, I decided it was time to share the knowledge and insights into the world of golf that I have gathered during my career as a golf professional. And joining me each episode will be a special guest from the golf industry. Together, we will discuss and share their insights, expertise, knowledge, and stories from their career and life in golf as well. Hope you enjoy this episode, and as always, I welcome and appreciate your input and suggestions for future shows, as well as your questions. So feel free to reach out and get in touch with me, the Vegas Golf Coach, by emailing me at info@golfcoachpodcast.com. That's info@golfcoachpodcast.com. Reach out and let us know what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. So let's get started with today's show. I want to welcome everyone into this episode of Fairways and Greens. And again, this week, I'm going to go on a journey, let's just call it another episode of the endless journey of golf. And as you know, from time to time, I will insert my own show, without a guest, just to kind of share some ideas and thoughts on the golf swing, in particular, instruction, learning. And so occasionally, we try to stay away from current events because there's so many different programs out there that showcase and are available for you to stay on top of what's happening week to week on the tour. And there's some interesting things always out there. But, you know, I chose to do this show just to kind of give a different perspective on golf. And just from the 30 years of experience that I've had in the business and all the different incredible individuals that I've had an opportunity to work with and share time with. And as a coach, you know, it's always important. I mean, when I meet someone for the first time, it's important to know what that student's thinking about. Now, if they're a total beginner, it's interesting because you can kind of mold and shape their thinking and get them programmed into a mode that allows them to improve on a consistent basis because they're not coming in with all these different thoughts, and a lot of my students have worked with other people, and it's important for me to know, you know, and ask them, what are you thinking about when you make your swing? It's got to be the starting point for everyone. And I even ask total beginners, you know, because a lot of them have had some input from someone, and that's why they're there. Maybe someone wants them to learn. But what the student describes may be a very acceptable approach to their swing. And so if they've got a fairly decent idea about it, then it's a little bit easier for me to kind of step in and kind of lead them down the right road to help them get better. You know, I have had the opportunity to work with some great people and I've always gleaned, you know, and always asked them, you know, so what's the one thing that if you were going to describe the golf swing in a couple of sentences or less, I mean, what would that be? And, I got an opportunity, you know, having read instructional books and trying to get better myself as a teacher and now a coach, there's been some very simple concepts out there. And I think one of the simplest, I think people make the game too complicated. And I know that all us old school guys think that there's way too much technology and way too much information. And as a regional training director for Henry Griffiths, I traveled for 4 or 5 years. And my job was to go out and work with other teachers and help them learn how to fit golf clubs. And as part of that process, I observed their teaching methods and watched them teach. And, you know, it was interesting that the better teachers said less, and the rest of the teachers that had way too much information, or they had a theory or a belief that I believe could have been based on what they thought the golf swing was in their own mind, and they just were able to reach a smaller group of golfers. I mean, they limited themselves to their ability to help a lot of different students. And so, you know, the first thing the first thing I always did was find out what are they thinking about? What is their concept of a golf swing? And from there, I try to keep the concept of the motion fairly simple. I mean, balance is the key fundamental of all things in life. And in golf, balance is a key fundamental. And I believe one of the things that is not really discussed a lot is weight transfer and the importance of it. It's an athletic motion and it requires a weight transfer. And you know, the center of the golf swing is where your front shoulder connects to your body. And a lot of people get that confused with the center of their motion and their center of gravity. But the true center of the golf swing is the left shoulder. And if you let your left arm, particularly if you're right-handed and you let your arm hang down, and wherever the club touches the ground would be the bottom of your swing arc. And for you to achieve that consistently, you need to have an understanding of how to create a motion that allows you to transfer your weight to the front foot and extend the golf club down through to the proper low point. And the closer you get to that, the better you're going to compress the ball and the better you're going to hit it. And, you know, But to teach that is not that an easy concept you have to give them a base understanding of the motion, and setup is so fundamental in golf, and I just don't believe that a lot of time is spent focused on that. So I always make sure my students are going home with the concept of you need to pick up a golf club, you need to do the work, you need to get comfortable with a proper setup, and when you understand a proper setup, it leads you to the ability to make a balanced motion. And if you have misalignments in your setup, it's difficult to create a balanced golf swing. I believe that, and as Michael Hebron drilled into my brain back in the late 80s, is that the inside moves the outside. And I know there's many different ways to teach and explain that, but I'm a firm believer that the shoulder rotation and weight transfer should load and unload the arms and hands. And when I discuss arms and hands with my students, it's from the elbow down. And I believe the upper part of the arm is should remain fairly connected to the shoulders and rotate with the body. And so you basically, you know, there's been talk about the triangle, and I think Jimmy Ballard was the first one to kind of describe it that way, but it's not like it hasn't been discussed before. Michael Hebron called it the Y. And if we can set up in a proper balanced position, and we can maintain the alignments that we created addressed throughout the golf swing, and we can rotate our shoulders or our spine between our feet, then the golf swing is very. Well, I would just say that the backswing is literally only inches long, because your ability to rotate the center of your swing, which is your front shoulder, behind the ball and then back to its starting point, is really not that big of a movement. I mean, the shoulder literally only moves inches, and some of us are more flexible and we can move maybe 8, 10, 12, maybe even a foot. But I think for most amateurs, just to be able to rotate the front shoulder behind the ball and then return it back to its original position is going to allow them to begin to understand the motion. We play golf from the ground up, and I believe balance is one of the key factors. So understanding that balance is the key and that the center of the golf swing is where your front shoulder connects to your body, if you can learn to get into the proper alignments at address, get into and get comfortable with your setup position, and you can maintain those alignments throughout your golf swing and simply learn to move the center, the left shoulder or the for a right-handed person, behind the ball and then return it back to its starting position and then release and face the target. I believe that, you know, the golf swing, the motion of the golf swing can be a simple concept to understand. Then it's just a matter of helping the student understand what it feels like to do that and to just start in a balanced position and basically finish in a balanced position. And that's the key goal. And when the arms and hands or the outer part of the motion control the inside, then you're at the mercy of the small muscles in the hands, and the basic motion is controlled by the outside. It's very difficult to maintain any kind of consistency, as opposed to if you set up and you simply rotate behind the ball and transfer your weight and stand up and face the target and allow the body to swing the hands or arms or the outside or the triangle, however your student relates to it. I believe you can begin to get begin to see an improvement in motion. And it's funny because, you know, a lot of times students, most of my students are they're evaluating whether they're getting better or not by how they're striking the golf ball and where it's going. And then, to be honest with you, what I'm looking at is I'm looking at improved motion. I'm looking at and trying to get them to understand the concepts of just simply a balanced motion. And I see with my naked eye tons of improvement. So my goal is, as the coach, is to let them know, look, I use video for that purpose. I take a maybe a swing or two when they first get there. I kind of look at it because it helps me kind of define the area that they're extremely weak in. And this is before your advanced golfers. Beginners, I simply stand them up and I have them hover the club around the above the ground and get a feel for the body swinging the arms. And I give them drills that will educate the hands to some degree in how they release. But the release and you know, I know at one point Hogan was asked about supination and pronation. He said, forget all about that. Just rotate your shoulders between your feet and all that happens naturally. And so the action of the arms and hands, and again, I describe that as from the elbow down, is created instinctively by understanding the concept of rotating, loading, and unloading the body to allow the body to swing the arms. And you know, the head kind of is a fulcrum point in the swing, just like it would be in a baseball pitcher swing or any type of motion. And, you know, I think if you, you're just basically trying to allow your body to swing your arms through and through the golf ball. And so I do a lot of teaching without the golf ball. I believe that I can change motion faster that way. I also believe that by giving them drills they can do at home, that they can improve more quickly as well. So, you know, the inside moving the outside creates leverage. And I just think that in a simple concept, if they can understand that, and sometimes you have to adapt it and you have to discuss it in different forms. But, you know, a lot of times I just have them swing left and face the target. I want to get there at minimum. I want to get their both shoulders square to the target and at the finish. And, you know, obviously the better players are actually going to completely unwind the upper body, and the right side will go past the left side. But in the beginning, just to get them to understand that you know, the purpose of the front foot is to stop them on the target, and the purpose of the back foot is to allow them to load the power package or the triangle, or to, you know, rotate to load and swing the arms. Randy Henry told me mentioned that George Newson's big concept and his simple idea of the swing is you do nothing with the hands and arms. You set up the same way with every club. The club length and the club design will put the ball in the right position if you create the same setup position with your hands in the same spot. Obviously, the forward shaffling of the irons is gonna just a little bit left of your cheek, maybe with your hand position, the forward shaffling will move the ball back in your stance somewhere just slightly above the middle. And as the clubs get longer and you get into the three woods and drivers, there's very little forward shaffling. And so by setting the hands in the same position, the club will have more of a straight down effect. So the ball would actually naturally be forward in your stance. So ball position is taken care of just by teaching them the basic setup position. Obviously, in a more advanced state, you move the ball back a little bit, it flights a little lower, you move it up, it flights a little higher. But that's, you know, irrelevant in the beginning. The idea is to have one consistent setup position and learn how to just swing in balance from that position. You know, I'm getting involved a little bit in my concept of what I think the golf swing motion is, and there are a lot of instructors out there that have their own theories on it, and you know, I would never say a bad word about anybody that's out there helping other people play golf. I just think that the simpler you can make it, the easier it is for the students to learn. It's a self-discovery process. And I'm there just to help them understand a simple concept that will allow them to, on their own, discover their own balanced motion. And, you know, so there's other things that I believe in. I mean, I'll take beginners and I'll put them in the impact position and let them and teach them what a proper impact position is, and then allow them to work from a couple feet back and a shorter swing to a couple feet through by extending, by pivoting, or And I use the word pivot. You can't turn on two legs, people. I mean, I'm sorry, but I hear so many people, well, you got to turn this way. In reality, if you have 2 feet on the ground, you can only rotate or pivot between your 2 feet. And so the proper terminology for the motion would be to rotate into the back foot and pivot and stand up on the front foot. So, you know, at impact, you want to have your weight on your front foot, and you want to be continuing, you want to move the club with the pivot of the upper body to the target, or if you want to call it turning your chest to the target or whatever. But the motion, if you create the impact with weight transfer, you're going to reach low point and hit it more consistently. And that being said, you know, I like to go, I have a fortune enough to have a lot of quotes from some pretty amazing old school, what I call old school golfers. And, you know, Ben Hogan, one of the quotes that I've read from Ben Hogan is, "The action of the arms is motivated by the movements of the body, and the hands consciously do nothing but maintain a firm grip on the club." So here we have another great golfer who believed that the hands and arms should do nothing in the golf swing but maintain the grip on the club. And Bobby Jones said the proper order of movement is body, then arms, and last the club head. Alex Morrison, who I've read a bit about, you know, and these quotes are quotes that I've taken from a lot of these books. I've taken them from other instructors who have gathered these things. We really didn't have a lot. We didn't have golf instruction on TV. We didn't have TV really for the most part when I was growing up. So there was no video. So, you know, we read books. Anytime we could, as TV developed, we began to watch, and there were so many unique different golf swings, it was very difficult to understand. And so some of the teachers from my generation, you know, Jim McLean, for instance, I mean, used video and analyzed pictures and swings and developed ideas and concepts out about it. And I think, you know, there's some great information out there. Alex Morrison, you know, the swing starts from the center of the body under the influence of centrifugal force. And Paul Runyon, the swing is entirely controlled by the shifting and turning of body weight. The arms become a connecting link and nothing more between the pivot point and the club head. I mean, to keep a concept simple makes it easier for students to discover how to do a motion that's based on an athletic concept of weight transfer and inside moving the outside. Another quote from Hogan, "The main thing for the average golfer is to keep any conscious hand action out of the swing. The correct swing is founded on a chain reaction. If you use the hands when you should not, you prevent the chain reaction." And, you know, I know from a fact of I love golf and I play golf, I've changed my swing over the years as I've gotten older and had to adapt to bad backs and less mobility. And the reality is that anytime I'm trying to think about what my hands are doing in the golf swing, I don't play very well. It's just, you know, for the brain to send a signal to your hands in the second it takes to make a golf swing is not going to happen. It by the time the impulse gets there, it's too late. So to try to control your backswing or to be thinking about what's going on with your hands and arms in the backswing is a very difficult thing to accomplish. And yeah, I never play well when I'm thinking about that. And, you know, and again, let me give you some more quotes. I mean, these are just simple concepts. I believe the first time I heard elbows down, arms in front was watching a video that one of my first real, I guess, mentors in terms of television was Jimmy Ballard, and Jimmy was all about connection and if you read Jimmy's book, I mean, the whole first, I think it was 150 pages, and the first 74 were on setup and athletic body, you know, braced positions, and it was all about, you know, getting set up to make the motion properly, and his deal was, you know, I guess, you know, when I heard elbows down, arms in front, I really didn't understand the power of that statement until I began to study the golfing machine and banging to realize that to keep the club on that simply just keeps the club on plane and keeps it allows you to swing and transfer your weight and produce the proper impact position. So again, another quote from Paul Runyon. It's been my experience that as you cease consciously directing the swing by the use of shoulders and arm muscles, you establish an automatic groove swing. So there's a little twist on it. But I think that, another quote from Hogan, the next time you see a good player in action, note how his body appears to drive forward before he hits the ball. And that's weight transfer, which is one of the key fundamentals in my mind. And Hogan said to start the downswing, forget about the arms and hands. Another one from Paul Runyon, note the club is not lifted back, but the initial movement in the backswing of shifting and turning or pivoting results in the club moving back. Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus talked in length about the hands and arms playing a less important role in the swing. And so I guess what I'm trying to say in today's episode is simply that, the less you consciously try to affect your motion with the hands and arms, the more balanced and the more consistent you're going to become. And, I basically, when I began to understand the golf swing as a kid, I was just trying to hit the golf ball. And it wasn't until I began to relate it to other sports. I played a lot of baseball when I was younger. And I began to realize that if I was just using my hands and arms to swing the baseball bat, I wasn't hitting it very far. And that when I got in and set in and braced myself and loaded and got into the loaded position, which is similar to rotating in the golf swing, I was able to really start hitting for power. And that was something that when I always ask my students, what other sports have you played? And it's always interesting to begin to see, and it's exciting to me, not interesting, but it's exciting for me to see the improvement begin to happen and to send them home with a concept where they, my thing is, and I believe, Hogan was one that said that, a day you don't swing a golf club is a day you've wasted. And so I always encourage my students that if they'll pick up a golf club every day for 5 minutes and just work on balance, work on motion, and without a golf ball, I think in the beginning, I see so much, the students that do that when they come back for their next lesson, I see so much more improvement in the basic core movement of their swing. And that to me is very, very gratifying. I think one of the biggest issues, and I'll reinforce this by some quotes from Tom Watson and Jack Nicklaus, is that when you use your hands and arms to start your golf swing, to create your motion, you're at jeopardy of not finishing your backswing, and you end up not making a complete rotation into the backswing, and so consequently, you're allowing your arms and hands to move your body. You're not gonna. It's very difficult to create a consistent backswing motion every time you rely on your hands and arms, depending on what frame of mind you're in or what kind of condition your body is. If you fail to make a proper backswing motion, if you fail to fit in Jack Nicklaus, quote unquote, just make sure he was very deliberate in the takeaway, but he always wanted to make sure he finished his backswing. And, I think that Tom Watson went in back in, there was a quote from Tom and being involved in golf for so long, I happened to hear this, and I kind of was involved in the 80s in golf. And Tom said, he became a consistent driver only in 1982. And he, the quote was based on the fact that in the past, I would make a false turn because my hand started first. And Watson has a very consistent swing today. But when his hand started first, his shoulders wouldn't turn enough. And so what he did is he changed his swing in the 80s was that he now starts everything away from the ball together, arms close to my body, and now my swing is more efficient, arms and bodies in harmony. And, he also said that on the course, I remind myself to have my arms closer to my body. And, these were things I read in Golf Digest articles back in the 80s. And, another story about the 86 Masters, the last, the most famous one, I think, of Jack's wins, the most exciting was is that the week before Jack Nicklaus won the 86 Masters, the April headline in the Augusta Chronicle said, Nicklaus takes game to the lesson tee. Well, the story was about that Nicklaus was on the practice range making a few swing corrections that he hoped would improve what he called horrendous play that year. And basically what he said was, I've taken the hands out of my game. He said, I was playing with too much hands, and I still want to win, and I think I can. And of course he did. And his backswing was shorter. He was more connected to his body. He was, you know, his quote was, I was lifting out of my plane on just about every backswing I made. And his consistency suffered as a result of it. And, you know, there's so many other, and I guess I'm bringing all this up just to kind of emphasize that the inside moves the outside. And the sooner you begin to realize that the body rotation, no matter how you feel it or how you understand it, and my job as a coach is to help you, and there's so many ways I can describe it to my students, and because I've focused on it for so many years, allowing them to rotate and move in balance, there's many different things that click with people. You just have to find what it is that helps them. Percy Boomer was another individual whose book on learning golf, I think for anyone out there who's aspiring to teach in particular, that it's an awesome book. But he wrote that from the shoulders, our power travels down through the arms. And as to arm action, I also believe the following common conception to be erroneous. Most people think they lift their arms to get them to the top of the backswing. And I have to agree with that. I mean, you know, I think the arms work absolutely subjectively to the shoulders, and they're not supposed to be lifted. And yet so many people come in and their concept is they've got to lift their arms up. They basically move their arms and they try to get them up onto the proper position that they see other golfers do. And it's basically an arm motion. And unfortunately it does not allow or create a consistent backswing motion. And a lot of my students come to me, and of course they want to hit it farther. Well, the arms and hands are the core power source of their golf swing, and they basically pull the body back and through the golf swing, and they're going to be limited, and they're never going to increase their club head speed. They're going to max out at a certain point, and it's frustrating. So, you know, one of the most common things I hear is, I'd like to hit it farther. And to do that requires them to understand how to hit something hard. Interestingly enough, Percy, when I first read his book, that was when I first heard the word triangle. And, you know, his concept was is that you know, again, the arms work absolutely subjectively to the shoulders. And that's why they are controlled. The triangle form, this is from his book, the triangle formed by our arms and the line between the shoulders should never lose its shape. It should be possible to push a wooden snooker triangle, like from the pool table, in between the arms and leave it there without impeding the golf swing back and through. And, you know, the arms have not been lifted. They have gone up in response to the shoulder movement, or the rotation, as we call it today. And Jimmy Ballard, obviously, was when I really began to, you know, and I got that paragraph in Percy's book, but it wasn't until Jimmy's book came out in the mid-80s that the triangle became a very big focal point for a lot of us as instructors. And, you know, Jimmy was that talked about it in his, in the triangle and its connection to the body was his basic core. I mean, it was his concept, the basic book. And so, you know, Percy went on to say, if you keep these three basic feels, the pivot, there you go, the pivot, not the turn, the shoulders moving in response to the pivot, and the arms moving in response to the shoulders, nothing much will go wrong with your game. And I think that in itself is kind of been the core of my belief system on the entire motion of the golf swing. And I think there's so many variations to it, and there's so much information out there today. There's so much technology. But, you know, none of these guys had TrackMan, and none of them had gurus following around. And again, when I began teaching in the early 80s, it was just a situation where, and I was taking lessons at the same time trying to get my game to honed out. So I you know, as a professional, I had to pass the players test. I wanted to play at that level. It was important to me that I be able to play par golf. And so I was working with several different instructors and gleaning their concepts at the same time as I was developing. And that's kind of what got me going as a teacher. I mean, working with these two instructors and getting a chance to work with Randy Henry, and that was when balance became the key fundamental for me. And I realized that my concept of what I was trying to do was kind of backwards. You know, I was basically confused about what the basic fundamentals of, and you know, the key thing was when we learned and we started applying club fitting to teaching, it was the key thing was if we could get our students in a balanced finish position, we can reward them with a golf club that will reward that position. And that was a very simple concept. And, you know, if you want to consciously, you don't really have to consciously produce a good shot. You know, basically all we're trying to do is get into a good setup position and maintain the triangle throughout the motion. And I kind of want to close my discussion about Percy. I mean, a phenomenal book, and I would encourage anybody on learning golf, Percy Boomer. It's still out there. It's still one of the most well-read and books from its era, and it's still a classic today. And so, you know, one of the quotes in the book is that we never have to consciously produce a good shot. We merely have to make certain movements which we have been taught and which will result in a good shot. And he was talking about trusting your swing, and you can trust it if the inside is moving the outside. And Michael Hebron made that famous, I think, in his book. Michael was instrumental, and his book was instrumental in my concept of teaching, and the fact that the where the center of the swing was, and that it only that really the backswing is only inches long, and all those things I gleaned from him, and it was powerful. And Bauer Nelson, just to bring him back up again, I have a quote here that I got from who knows where, but I, over the course of my career, I have read I'm reading a book, and all of a sudden something pops out, and I've jotted all these things down, and I'm kind of looking at some old rustic notes here in today's story. But you know, there's so much old school information out there that's so good. And Byron said that when talking about the discoveries that helped his game, here's some of the comments he said. You know, he talked about seeing pictures of leading amateur and professional golfers of his day rolling their wrists, and you know, a lot of people think there's this release thing going on. Well, the hands release naturally in a proper golf swing. But back to his point, he was watching them rolling the wrist as they swung near the golf ball. And as a result of a series of experiments, he began attempting to do that. He found that when he did not try to roll his wrist and just let them stay in place for about 30 inches before impact and through the early stages of the follow-through, he increased his accuracy. He also talked about the best way to ensure a well-timed swing. He just felt like you should start the backswing in a single motion, shoulders, hands, and club head together. And you'll hear a lot of instructors say that, you know, you want to move the club head first, okay? And to do that really requires you to move the triangle as a unit. And so I teach a lot of that concept of keeping the face looking at the golf ball and the takeaway, so that most amateurs, when they turn, they rotate the shaft, and the shaft turns. If you had a label on the top of your shaft, most people that are handsy will rotate that shaft instantly, and the club goes immediately inside and gets into a position that's very difficult to swing and balance consistently. It becomes more of a time. But you know, when you know, just to, you know, to read to hear in Byron's book, just talk about that you should start the backswing in a single motion, and so that one piece takeaway concept was something that's been out there for a long time. I mean, there's really, you know, I'm bringing back all these old references just to let you know that there's not a lot of information that's different. It's just there's different ways to spin it. There's different concepts. I mean, there's the concept of width and all these different things that you can work with people. But when you stop trying to add extra movements in the hands and arms, you're going to play better. You know, it's just that simple. And I just, you know, I think that there's many different ways you can visualize the golf swing. I mean, I think Michael Hebron was big on kind of seeing it as a wheel, and his diagrams were instrumental in me helping me become a better player. And I really in the mid I'd say from 84 to 88, I really didn't know I was going to end up becoming an instructor, but I was fascinated by it, and I began, and when I met Randy Henry in 1987, 88, and the Henry Griffiths guys, and got around, I began to realize that basically, as Michael Hebron said, in particular, that you, and I'm sorry, I'm trying to find his quote here. This is out of his book, but it said, one of our goals in golf, this is Michael Hebron again, one of the goals in golf should be to make the most efficient swing possible, and repeat this swing as often as we can automatically. That's our goal. And so a swing can be repeated if the hub of the swing does not change position when the swing is in motion. Another way of saying this is we want the hub of the swing, which he considered the center of the swing, to revolve on its axis throughout the back and forth motion of the swing. And the best way to keep the swing on its axis when it is in motion, or prevent the hub of the swing from changing positions, would be to start your hub or center of the swing moving first. So basically, the center of the swing is the left shoulder, and you basically want to start your swing by controlling it with the center. And that was when I began to realize the importance of rotation in the swing, because by using my hands and arms for all those early years, I wasn't loading or finishing or completing the backswing rotation, and consequently, I'd had directional problems, and because I was relying on my hands and arms to load my body instead of my body controlling the inside, as it was described, controlling the outside. And so I just think that his book enlightened me into a simple way to understand the golf swing is a circle, and it is a circle. Geometrically speaking, it's a circle on an inclined plane. And if you can control the swing by taking the triangle and using the center, the front shoulder, as the starting point, and move it back consistently to the same point and move it forward while maintaining that triangle in front of you, elbows down, arms in front, however you want to describe it, is just a very simple way to understand how the golf swing motion can be created. And that's kind of what I've tried to incorporate, and I still use these concepts. It's the simpler I can keep it for my students, because what I'm trying to do is help them discover their swing. And I, as an avid golfer, and for, in the early, late 70s, early 80s, when I really got hooked on the game and really wanted to take it to another level, I went through all the same processes my students went through. I mean, I think all good coaches and teachers have gone through, and their own journey for their own swing has helped them develop their concept of teaching. And I think that in the beginning, I was really didn't have a clear visual concept, a conceptual idea of what the golf swing was. I didn't understand the concepts of centrifugal force and the inside move and the outside. And I was just out there trying to figure out how to hit the ball better. And without the concept of proper impact, where it is, where the low, I mean, what you're trying to do, how the actual club works is something I talk a lot about now. I think the tool, you have to understand how the tool was designed to work. And, I think that those are things that I try to educate my students in. So, the thing is I heard the concept in the, and I got, this is kind of out of the golfing machine, but, Homer said that it's like you're a computer and you're getting fed all this information, and it's like programming. I mean, you feed all this information into your brain, and it's kind of garbage in, garbage out and then as more information comes in, as your understanding becomes clearer, the good information rises to the top. And it's like throughout my career, I'm sitting there and I'm reading a book, or I'm, and all of a sudden I read something in this book, and it jogs something that a great instructor or one of my teachers told me, and all of a sudden I understood exactly what they were trying to tell me. And so, by keeping concepts simple, there's less confusion rattling around the brain. And you know, I've gone on to study a lot of Michael Hebron stuff because he's a walking encyclopedia on how the brain functions and how we learn. And it's enlightened me on how to become a more effective teacher to my students, because now I'm beginning to understand how the brain works and the concept of how to teach more effectively has resulted in that. I think all of Michael's peers and all of us that have been aspiring to teach, if you haven't gotten involved in his concept of it's just amazing stuff. And if you're a student out there and you're it's amazing. The first book I ever read was See the and Feel the Inside Move the Outside, and that, you know, that was basically Michael's book on that he wrote for a master PGA teaching thesis, and just an incredible individual, still just very, very sought after. And I can't say enough about how he, not only that, but when he wrote his book, he is where I got my quote thing from. I mean, I read his book and he had all these quotes from all these famous golfers and instructors. And you know, at that point I started cutting pictures out. And I think having a notebook full of pictures to show your students, I think visually seeing the golf swing and obviously a picture is just a moment in time in the golf swing, but you know, to put sequencing together. And I think I've learned over time that video may not be necessarily the best way to teach, but it can be a valuable tool to show progress. And I think a lot of students, as they begin to work and change their swing or begin to learn their swing, they don't really think they're getting any better. And yet in my eyes, I see them and I have to encourage them and find something great to say about every swing. It's a process to learn this golf game. I mean, I've changed my swing twice now throughout my career, and it took me 18 months the first time I made a swing change due to my back problems to get to a point where I could trust it again. And you know, and I, being a teacher, I was stubborn enough to go out there and try to figure it out on my own because I thought, you know, I know what I'm supposed to do. The problem is I didn't have my own set of eyeballs. And here's the problem with feels in golf. I felt like I was doing the right thing, but I really wasn't because I didn't have the eyeballs. And it was a time when I was working in the business, but I wasn't really teaching. I was out, you know, working for Henry Griffiths, club manufacturer. I was working on my game more than anything. And so I'd work during the day, travel, and then I'd get a chance to hit some balls, and I'd go out on the range and I thought I was doing what I wanted to do, and I thought I had the right concept in my mind, and I possibly did, but what I was feeling was not what I was really trying to accomplish. So the feels can be very elusive, and I think that having a coach that I can eyeball you. And so I fortunate enough, I ran back into Randy, and I ran into a good friend of mine, Michael Markham, and I ran into Matt Flinigan, and these guys would tell me, look, you're not doing that. And so it wasn't until I got another set of eyeballs on me that I began to realize that even though I thought I was doing this, and they'd go, so what are you trying to do? And I'd say, no, man, you're not even close. And that was when I began to realize how important it is to really have an understanding of what you're trying to do and to have a set of eyeballs watching you. Because, I mean, listen, the golf pros out there, they don't lose their golf swing overnight. It's typically something simple. They get an alignment issue and they're willing, or maybe they change equipment and it's an issue. But in reality, if you get one of your setup alignments out of position and you're a good player, you'll overcome it in the beginning. I mean, I could hand a good player a badly fit golf club, and you give him three swings, he's going to figure out how to get it going to the target. The problem, because he knows where the club head is and the club face is. The problem is if he grooves that swing with that club that's not suited for him for a variety of different reasons, it's going to affect and creep into his game over time. Bad lie angles. I've seen there's a story about Nick Price having bad lie angles, and for the first time he ever dropped out of the top 50 back when he was on top of his game. He got a new set of equipment and it wasn't fit right for him, and he suddenly was struggling. I mean, the swing that he required to get his irons going to the target didn't work with his driver. So there's so many different factors in the game, and so it's always important to obviously I'm a big believer of having the proper fit equipment, and I think that's where the TrackMans and the launch monitors can be of tremendous value to help you maximize the quality of your equipment to your game and your clubhead speed. But I think as a teaching tool, I'm not so convinced that it's the greatest way to go. I think that you just have to visually have a get a clear concept of what it is you're trying to do. You have to take one thing at a time in golf. I think there's too much information is going to create paralysis, and so I literally try to look at the one thing that's going to improve the many things. And if setup isn't good, literally go home and work on your setup. Get comfortable over the ball. It reduces tension. Tension reduces motion. Tension is the worst thing you can have in your golf swing. You know, if you're going to allow the body or the inside to move the outside, if you have tension in the arms, particularly from the elbow down and tight grips and actually just reaching, not having the proper setup, if you just extend your arms out, you're going to feel tension immediately in your arms, and the ability to freewheel and swing and create centrifugal force is going to be limited by the tension you create at address. So a proper address, relaxed address position, braced, athletic, is a very key aspect of golf. And I think, a lot of students spend more time trying to fix the backswing than they do making sure they have the proper alignments at address. I have a lot of really good high school students, and, if I walk out on the range and they don't have alignment aids on the ground and they're just randomly hitting golf balls, I really reprimand them, because it's just too easy to stand there and have your shoulders going one way and your feet going another way, and you think you're aiming at this target when you're aiming over here, and eventually it's going to take all the work we've done and it's going to create problems. And when they suddenly start playing poorly, the first thing we do is we get them lined up again, and it's inevitably there's something in particular that's causing this problem. And, again, they're accomplished players, like tour players and top amateurs, and little things create big problems over time if you don't maintain a consistent setup, an alignment to the target, body alignments. Everything's important in golf, and the margin of error is so small that a little bit of alignment issue that a good player develops, or like Jack, he was lifting, and as he got older, it was disconnecting his arms from his body, and it was causing problems at impact. Things, just to understand the importance of setup and alignment is so important in golf, and so. When I take a true beginner, I setup is so fundamental, and then I actually put them in the impact position, and so from there we finish the golf swing. We set up, we move to impact, we don't make a backswing, and then from impact we learn how to release the body to the target without using the arms, without allowing the arms to pull them to the finish position. So just to teach them from impact to the finish position is a goal of mine. What do I do with my feet? Well, every day you go to the golf course, you're looking for your balance. And so some days you might have your left foot squared off. Some days you might have both feet toed out. It's a function of what you can do to create balance. And I just think that by keeping things simple, by understanding some simple concepts, I'd like to kind of close out this session by describing kind of what the process should be for you as a student in learning. And the golf swing is a motor skill. I guess you could call it that. Motor skills should be kind of taught that way. And it means that you begin with the simplest motions. And so setup, obviously key fundamental, and you move step by step into the full motion. I think by starting at address, by teaching impact, by having them understand that controlling the inside or the center of the swing is a way to and so maybe that's the first thing we do. But never as a student, you should never go on to the next step until you've made progress with the initial fundamentals. And I think too often, you know, students, even on their own, if they're not disciplined enough, they're going to try to move farther along, or they're going to watch something on TV and they're going to go to try to throw that in there. It's just you got to be patient. I mean, I get, you know, a lot of students that come to me have played for a while, and they have a lot of processes going on in their head. They have all these different thoughts, and they think they slice it for this reason, and it may not be the reason. I mean, is it a path slice or a face slice? And so, you know, golfers that have played for a while, a lot of times we do talk about the fundamentals. We talk about we find the one thing in their motion that's going to, and typically it's rotating to load and not, you know, using their arms and hands to turn their body. That's typically always something that I work with, because it's the key source of balance. But, you know, there's things like, you know, they slice the ball and they don't understand what causes the slice. And is it face? Is it path? Is it both? And so, you know, I can take a more advanced golfer and we can talk about ball flight laws and teach ball flight laws. And that's a simple, I mean, they're reacting to the ball, and they're trying to stop their slice, and many times the exact thing they're doing is the exact opposite of what they should be doing. I think I can't tell you how many times, you know, I ask all my students, you know, if you want to get the ball airborne, do you hit the top, middle, or bottom? And 90% of them will say the bottom, and that's going to produce ball flight to the right, particularly when they miss it. And so, you know, you can swing up and hit it straight. You can swing down and hit it straight. Swinging down compresses the ball, and it's going to have more power and more control. And swinging up is going to be weaker and off to the right when you miss it. And your down swings without weight transfer are going to go to the left. I mean, there's simple concepts that, you know, why did I hit it over there? Well, my job as a coach, after, you know, several lessons, is, particularly with more advanced students, is to help you understand why you hit it right, left, and straight. I mean, if you don't, then I'm not doing a very good job. You know, and that's important, because you're going to go, and these guys are playing golf, and, you know, they need to know that if they get in this pattern of hitting it left, what's causing it, so that they can self-correct. It's a self-discovery process. But, you know, again, too often students move forward before they really are ready. And so the thing that I'm cautious about is, if they come back to me and they, in a week or two, and they haven't done the proper work and we're still at the same place, we don't go any farther. I'm not going to move them farther until they accomplish the first goal, whatever that is we set. You know, I think that, you know, they improve with properly supervised practice with a specific goal in mind. And when they're not around me, I give them I tell them how I want them to practice. I want you not to hit golf balls this week. I want you to go home. I want you to swing 100 times or whatever, and working on your balance and working on the concept we just discussed. And then when you come back, if we've got that down and we see improvements there, we can add something else. We might be able to add something specific about swing plane or something else that will help you, you know, get to impact better. You know, there's a lot to golf. There's a lot of information out there. And, you know, the avid golfers have a passion like I do. I watch the Golf Channel. I watch, you know, I watch Martin Hall and Breed and all the guest teachers that come on. And I learn from them. But what I'm looking for is drills and techniques they use to accomplish certain things. So it gives me more ammunition to describe, you know, weight transfer. So there's multiple different ways I can describe weight transfer. There's multiple different ways I can describe the triangle. I can describe impact. If there's this concept of over the top and under plane and on plane, all this stuff. But just the tools and the train. And I think training aids are huge important. And I think having a book of pictures and having training aids there and having the access of video. And I'm fortunate enough to have a weight transfer machine, and I can literally put it in live mode and teach them the proper footwork in the golf swing. And sometimes, I mean, all great golfers have great footwork. And I mean, that was one of Tommy Armour's statements in his book. that he wrote back in 1950. He says, all the great golfers have great footwork. Well, yeah, because that's good balance. And so I think balance is the key fundamental in all things in life. And I think the golf swing is, there's no exception in the golf swing. I think with good balance, you have a better chance of playing. So if the overall fundamental of all great golfers is good balance, then that should probably be one of the big key things we work on with our students. And so, you know, with that, I'm going to probably wind this thing down today with a few final thoughts. And I think that, you know, the ability to progress in golf for my students is going to rely on the amount of time and effort they invest in the game. And we're still just talking about the golf swing here. I mean, the game is not played on the driving range. And so, you know, it's important for me to take my particularly my more advanced students to get them on the golf course. And fortunately enough, I have an indoor simulator that has over 60 golf courses from all over the world, and I can actually put them on the golf course, and I can help them. A lot of them actually can stand on a driving range with alignment aids and do pretty well, and then get on the golf course and they aim completely in the wrong direction. And so, you know, a pre-shot routine, we teach that. I mean, you know, the golf swing is just a small part of golf, and the game is really what we're trying to get better at. So knowing the base, you know, so most people come to lessons and they want to get a better golf swing, and that's great. But, you know, we also want to learn to play the game. And so I think that you have to have be able to blend them all. And it you know, it takes time and effort and to invest in the more you play the game. And Michael Hebron's, just for instance, one of his most recent books was, Play to Learn. And I think that there's too much information on the golf swing. I think it handicaps people's ability to play the game because there's too much conscious thought going on. And there, you know, I just want to see the shot, swing it, and go get it. And, you know, and I know that when I'm on the golf course thinking golf swing, I don't play very well. And so I try to instill that in my students. You know, it's important that what I try to do is when I'm on the range warming up, I'm just trying to get a feel for what my good swings feel like. And I'm just trying to repeat that feel on the next swing. And you know, I have drills I use on the golf course that just, you know, if it's not my turn and I'm not in anybody's line of sight, you know, you might see me over there just trying to maintain a feel. And I think, you know, one of my good friends, Dalton McCreary, has this concept of time and the stopwatch. And I watched him use it when we were doing golf schools together back in the late 90s. And it's a phenomenal thing. And we've discussed the fact that, you know, if you pick up your rhythm, and his theory is that anything less than a second, you can't perform the motion. And I tend to agree with that because we've looked at it and timed it and seen it. And, you know, I'm better when I'm at 1.25 seconds. That's my tempo. And so I have an auditory count. And so when I'm on the golf course, if I can feed my brain, I know how to perform a golf swing. But in between shots on the golf, I mean, we really only hit golf shots for maybe 10 or 12 minutes on the golf course. Think about it. You're standing on the driving range and you can hit 300 or 400 balls in an hour, okay? But you go out on the golf course, you're really only going to make 40 or 50 swings for that 4 or 4.5 hours you're out there. So you're literally only swinging a golf club for maybe 10 or 15 minutes or less, you know, maybe 8 minutes. Because think about it. Let's say you have 50 golf swings and they last 1 second. Do the math. I mean, it's not a lot of time you're actually swinging a golf club. So what I try to do is keep, you know, when I'm waiting between shots, I'll get out and swing a little bit. I'm just trying to keep the rhythm and the feel for what I felt that day on the driving range before I go out to play. So, you know, I'm kind of left the golf swing now and I've gone into the game. But to play golf and to work on your golf swing are two separate things. And so when I go out to play, I'm not trying to work on my golf swing. I'm just trying to find a rhythm and tempo. And that's, you know, there's theories that you can't teach rhythm and tempo. It's kind of this natural thing that people have. But I really, truly believe that using Dalton's method of auditory control, where you have a one, and he used to do one and roll. But, you know, anything like that. I mean, Vijay Singh had his auditory things. I think by having just giving your mind something to think about other than the mechanics of the golf swing, stand up, get behind the ball, see the shot you want to hit, feel it, pick your club, stand up there, and just, hey, one and two, and just hit your finish. And, you know, and take the mental
garbage that bounces around in your brain about the mechanics of the golf swing. And you know, you just have to stay smooth when you play golf, you know, relax. And as I've read before, and I'm not sure exactly who said it, but it's a state of grace. You know, your golf swing does not have to be fast or hard to have power. And I think, you know, anxiety and tension create bad rhythm and tempo, and the swing gets too fast, and you can't make a balanced golf swing if you're moving too fast. And everybody has their natural tempo and rhythm. And so, you know, I just like to start with a sand wedge on the range, and I just like to take these nice, smooth swings and just kind of get a feel for it. And if I can keep that same swing tempo and same feel all the way through my driver, I'm playing pretty good. And so I really believe there's no difference. I think you swing, every swing is the same. I think all your tempo should be the same. As the club gets longer, you generate more centrifugal force and more power, and the ball goes farther. You know, if the inside moves the outside and you're swinging in balance, you're going to play better golf. And so I'll close with that today. I just wanted to share some simple concepts. I teach a lot, and I know it's a challenging game for all you out there. And you know, I'm sure if there's teachers listening to this, they're going to want to throw all kinds of stuff at me. But you know what? It's their style and my style. And all I believe in is that, you know, balance and weight transfer is important in all athletic sports. And I think it's important in golf. And I think by teaching balance and motion and allowing the hands and arms, the outside, not to control the inside, or the bigger muscles of the body is a key fundamental that everyone should understand. And I want to thank you guys for joining me today. It's been fun sharing my thoughts and concepts. I hope that somebody benefited from it. And, you know, there's so many great books out there on golf. And, you know, I just think that, you know, I've quoted from some, and I think from the mental aspect, there's some great stuff out there as well. And I just wish you all fairways and greens. And till next week, I'm going to say goodbye. I do want to mention one more thing. I have a great, great instructor and what I know her as the putter sensei. Chris Aoki is going to be on the show in the next week or so. I don't want you to miss it. We're going to talk a little bit of golf theory, but we're also going to bring her back again. With her fit to aim putter fitting system, and she was with me back in the 90s when we were working with Chuck Hogan, and we developed in the Henry Griffiths Company developed a putter fitting system that's phenomenal, and she was behind that, and I think you're going to enjoy her. And so until next week, this is the Vegas Golf Coach signing out. Fairways and greens. Well folks, it's time to say goodbye to this episode of Fairways and Greens. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, just head over to the golfcoachpodcast.com. That's www.golfcoachpodcast.com. And don't forget to reach out with your questions and your input on the show to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. So reach out with your questions and anything you'd like to add or any suggestion on future shows to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. And you can find me, the Vegas Golf Coach, and a link to my blogs, coaching centers, and programs at www.vegasgolfcoach.com. That's www.vegasgolfcoach.com. So goodbye for now, and here's to finding your share of fairways and greens in your journey through life and golf.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.